This is RS Movie Update, episode 413, recorded Friday, May 17th, 2013, The Nexus. Hello, everybody, and thank you for listening to RSBNB Update. We are here this week with Paul, PFK99, SilverWiz9, and Paul, what's the most important thing about your previous RuneScape career that you'd like to inform us?
I'm a moderator on the website www.rsbnb.com.
No. You're the one that got married for one of our Get on the Show contests way back in the day. And that's the kind of dedication that we love.
Yep.
But it was an old after, wasn't it?
It wasn't what?
It was annulled, that marriage,
right? Oh, yeah, sure. It was just for a photograph. Yes. If I remember correctly.
All right. So, who else do we have with us here?
The other Asian guy.
Oh, I'm not Asian.
I didn't say you were.
That is not incorrect.
All right. So, you checked out The Nexus for us this week, so give us a bit of a rundown on what exactly The Nexus is.
Alrighty then, Nexus. It is located in Lumbridge Swamp. The idea behind this is that it's a way for low-level members to level up their prayer without having to resort to burying a million bones, small bones, buying dragon bones, finding altars, etc., etc. So, what happens is that there's a giant monster in the middle of this thing, and you have to capture its essence in order to make four pillars change a certain color to bring it out and kill it. Or, actually, no, don't kill it, you banish it. So, each pillar has four bowls. Order one, battle, chaos, and fealty.
Battle, chaos, and fealty.
Yes, and each of the bowls represents a different color, unless there's a bug like I happened where it didn't change the color. But so red, purple, white, and what's the last one? Red, purple, blue. There you go. Blue, red, white, purple. And the whole point, and the idea is that you have to have all four colors going at once in order for the pillars to charge up and try and summon the monster from beneath. However, once the pillars have lightened up, you cannot put the essence into that bowl again. You have to switch to another one. So you basically go in a circle, and you continuously gather essence, put it in a different bowl every single round.
All right. Now, when you say essence, do you mean rune essence or something else?
Oh, at the monster's essence or corruption, if you want to go that way.
Okay. So corruption essence related specifically to this, not to be confused with rune essence.
There's nothing there. It's all self-contained. And this whole thing is a way, from what I've read, is it only gives you enough prayer to get you from level 1 to level 40. And
right.
So what happens is, as it's a good way for lower levels to people to get up prayer without having to grind so much for their bones. And it makes it a little more interesting because you have to work as a team.
Okay. And you know, rightly so, because you and I are both fairly high prayer levels, so you wouldn't exactly know what kind of prayer XP you were getting from this, because I assume you don't get XP if you're beyond the level 40, right?
No, you get XP from it. There's a cap. It gives you enough prayer to get to level. So it gives you, I think it was 37,000 experience.
Okay,
I don't know what it was to get to level 40. So you get to that much. Once you reach the cap, you're done.
All right. Now, with regards to working as a team in this, how hard is it to work as a team? Because, you know, certain activities in the past that have required team activities, Trouble Brewing comes to mind, Stealing Creation as well, really don't work that great unless you go in with a team of your own. So how does this work in this case?
This one is actually easily You can easily get people, random people together and just do this. The only thing is you actually someone has to know that you need all four colors. The problem some people were having is one person was being a little stupid, say, we have to fall in line on top of the pillar. No, you don't. That doesn't mean anything. No, you don't. You just got here. Shut up. So basically, the whole idea is you start on one place, everyone starts a different bolt, and just keep going clockwise or kind of clockwise, however you want to do it. Just keep. Consensus is, let's go clockwise in that pillar and make sure that your color stream is different from the one from any others. And you just keep
is
going.
Is there any... Go ahead.
That's it.
All right. Are there any further visual cues or auditory cues maybe to help people who might be colorblind or something or might have a badly colored monitor?
Well, each bowl, so what we've found out is that it's easier to say, hey, put it in this bowl rather than, hey, make this stream blue or red or yellow, or not yellow, or white. It was much easier to say, hey, fill up the fealty bowl, hey, fill up the order bowl, instead of trying to say the color. Because the color of the bowl is actually different from the stream, and a lot of people did not realize that. So you have to put it in different bowls. And it's funny, it was just so many to say, put it in this bowl, not that one, or whatever it was, whatever they needed.
All right. And are the bowls labeled, or?
They're labeled. It's basically, think of it like it's a tree, and there's four bowls on each side, one bowl, each one of each four sides. So it's one in front, left, and then back. And it's easily clickable. You just click on it, whichever one you want to put it in.
All right. Now, with regards to this, the different bowls, what do they mean in terms of lore with regard to this storyline?
The lore, it's something to do with something underneath that's after the, what is it?
Rune the Mysteries? Wake
quest. No, the Wake Quest.
The
basically
world
something
wakes.
About the, what was the last Gothic one? I can't remember the name of that.
Yeah, the World Wakes.
There we go. Yeah, sorry. So it's basically something after that where monsters, since Gothic Side is a little bit out of balance and you keep it contained.
All right. Rondo. So in other words, it is balancing out this stuff, I guess, because Gothic is not here, so it's filling that void, correct?
Yeah, something like that. And and one other thing about it is that after every five rounds, the monster in the middle will come up where you're trying to banish it away. It gives you a golden bone that you can bury right away. It gives you like small little boost in XP.
That's nice.
So for us higher level, it's about 1K per bone, which is not that bad. For me, it
is
like
a nice boost, I guess.
It's designed for lower level people. Keep that in mind. It's not designed for people like me who's already past 50.
Yeah. So can you actually go into the Nexus?
No. Can't go into Nexus.
It's not a supernatural place where whatever in your mind comes up and you can just live there forever, right?
Right. Shane, you know what that is? That's called getting high on marijuana. Awkward silence.
Yeah, I was actually referring to a Star Trek.
Yes, we all know what that Nexus was referring to, Shane.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help it, but
we knew that from the very beginning. You did say you were working on a list of Star Trek puns.
All right. So anyways, that's the Nexus, good for people who are lower level prayer. And you know, I remember back in the olden days when I first got members and prayer, realized how useful prayers were, and it was such a stretch to go to level 43 for the Protect from Melee prayer. And this goes to what, level 40?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I mean, just to have this extra little bit of help is great. Definitely will make things easier for people and probably turn less people away from prayer than it did in the past. Because, you know, it's a typical thing with an MMO. When you first come to it, you're interested to see all the little shiny things you can get. And you see, oh dear, this is level 43. And oh dear, prayer is so expensive to train if I don't buy the bones. Oh, I don't have the money to buy the dragon bones, etc., etc., etc. So definitely good that they brought this update out, and nice way to ease training of lower levels. That's good. Is there anything else?
I was going to say, back when RuneScape Classic, when I was playing it, I didn't even know what prayer there was. I didn't even know it was there at the time. I got myself to like level 50 before I knew, oh, what is this stuff? Oh, it's something called prayer.
Yeah,
and
that's me too.
But at that time, we could kill whatchamacallit, mob giants and whatnot, because at the time they were actually mid-level, so we could kill those easier and get big bones, start leveling up. I buried bones before, but I didn't know why. I was like, oh, okay, I don't know why. Oh, again, but okay.
Yeah, you know, one thing I did when I first started playing RS2 and whatnot is I discovered the thick skin prayer at level 1, and it only lasted for so long, and it was an accident just discovering it. So, and you know, this was before Tutorial Island, so there was no sense of prayer or anything back then. You'd basically on your own. So this would be good, and I wonder if this could be incorporated at all into the beginning tutorial, but I guess that's in Taverly now, isn't it?
I don't know.
Oh, well, it's unfortunate, but sounds like a good update nonetheless. Thank you for covering that for us.
Yes.
All right, so on to the release notes for this week. A bunch of hot fixes, actually. No, this one is not here, but it was hot-fixed earlier in the day-to-day, I think, so that if you have some of the high-level player-owned ports, superior armor, and you got killed with it, previously it would drop it for huge, huge sums of money. It was basically a get-rich scheme for people, and that was one of the things that was hot-fixed, but was not listed here yet. So that's been fixed.
Was it for the port armor or something?
Yeah, the ports armor, the superior ports armor. Each one dropped like worth 100 mil or so, so die a couple times and get the armor and off you go. Mm-hmm. You're insta-rich. Insta-rich. Here we go. Armor from player-owned ports no longer drop. I didn't have my thing refreshed from earlier. Taskmaster emote now functions correctly. Ranged damage bonuses on armor now applied correctly to non-charge bow weapons. And low-level challenges are no longer given to players of higher level. So there's some of them right there. Also, mining picks and woodcutting hatchets no longer appear on the players' backs as well as in their hand when using them. That was one of the graphical tweaks made this week.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Things crop up like that from every now and again. If either of you guys see anything that looks interesting here, just jump right in. I really don't have much else, aside from the Lily of the Valley being removed once again.
Tokharkok has been rebalanced with the most recent combat changes in mind. He feels 20... I said Hawk.
Yes.
That's not what I heard, but sure.
Whatever.
That's not why I was laughing. I was laughing because... this is exactly what you were struggling with, wasn't it?
Wait, was it? Oh, that was the boss?
I think so.
Now deals 25% less damage, drains 25% prayer slower, has lower block chance, and less, and his hit points have increased to 50,000. Well, that doesn't help me.
Yeah, well.
Well, anyway, I found out. Hey, key tip. If you are anyone here that's actually trying to do that quest, go range. Double range. Don't bother with magic and melee. Range was so much easier.
For those of you guys wondering, he is talking about Brink of Extinction.
Yes. Range it. Don't do anything else. Range is the way to go. Just pin them down and snipe them.
Alright.
Okay. And, to hard kill, if I call Drop Worship with 2 to 3 times normal XP, and Obsidian Armor damage. Missed this one. The cost of Obsidian Armor buff in the Fight Cauldron has been halved to 15,000 toko. And chance for some armor to degrade has been changed and no longer degrades outside of Tazar area, but has 50% chance of degrading inside. And that change reduced 20% when under the effects of the Toko donation buffer. Buff.
Alright.
And
armor finally, following last week's changes, we've altered the Kalphite kink, and Queen Black Dragon hit chances to make them slightly easier to hit.
I didn't have a problem hitting them. It was the problem that I wasn't... No, I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah. But anyways, that's good. You know, and I was on that balancing track of making sure the EOC update is proper. So.
Okay.
Right, Paul, you see anything interesting on that page?
Nothing super, super interesting.
Okay. All right, now this is something that is good to talk about. The new interface system alpha update. They pushed an update to the alpha, bringing a number of changes that people are interested in. So first up is player-controlled interface transparency. So you can have a totally opaque interface like we had back when RS2 came out, or you can have a transparent interface like we used to have, or you can have something in the middle like we have right now. That's good. Interface locking, you can lock it so there's no more chance of moving something around when you don't want to. And slim windows mode, so you can finally slim down those title bars. Didn't we say this was an issue when it first came out?
Yeah, my own problem is I don't play RS on a full screen, so it's quite nice that I can actually keep it smaller and actually scale down to size.
Yeah, and you know, this is something I was playing around with. I actually came up with a couple of decent interface setups again last night to truly maximize the space that I have. I came up with this one that you could use if you're wanting to play it at like a 1080p type resolution or something similar. It looks pretty good, but just one issue I think that they need to fully address with this interface system is that when you resize the game HUD, that indigo color in the background is really annoying to see. Mm-hmm. So I'm uploading two shots of this right now. I uploaded them last night, but I lost the link, so I need to re-upload them here. But I want to see what Paul thinks of this because, you know, it's such a improvement on the interface that he would have known from when way back when. So,
hey, do you have any screenshots or something? I'm not in the alpha.
Yeah, they're coming right now. Essentially what this does, Paul, is it modernizes the interface to a point where it's truly customizable by the player. You can even move around the game window and stuff to see like whether or not you want to do some variation on the old fixed window style, or maybe you want something like what we used to have as well. So quite a bit of customizability. I got the images for you right now. Just have a look in Skype.
Gotcha. I was like, where are these images?
The first one is the super widescreen one.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is more of a conventional layout that I came up with. I'll upload these to a permanent host and put them in the show notes after. But what do you think?
The widescreen one, I think, is the one that I would use, given the two.
Yeah, I designed that.
Yeah, that looks a lot better to me than... I'd even consider making the window a little smaller, or put the chat window towards the right. I don't know. It just seems there's a lot of area to cover.
Second image.
The first image, I believe.
Okay. What actually appears to the immediate left of the inventory is the interaction window where your chat HUD appears and all the text appears when you're talking to someone.
Mm-hmm.
The
window is the game window itself is so large, and to move, say 1,000 pixels to click on something, that's a lot.
Yeah,
that's why I always used to play in fixed window size, because it was very
Yeah.
Easy in terms of mouse movements to get to everything versus the way that it was previously designed with, or that it was changed into with the HD update. You'd have to scroll all the way across your entire screen to do anything that was useful. And I don't know if there's key bindings now, but that would also make it probably easier.
There will be.
That should have been added a long time ago.
As an example, what you say, the fixed window, they actually found a way to make that relevant again in 2013, which is something I was absolutely amazed with, and you can see a bit of that right here. Like you said, you could resize this window down still to even a 1280 by 720 with the same kind of HUD on the right and whatnot, and you would still have a decent amount of gameplay space to have, and you wouldn't really need to move your mouse all around that much. So definitely a good option. But just have a link in the show notes, update.rsmovie.com, to see what I came up with.
Indeed.
It was actually pretty nice to play around with that. So, all right. So that's it for the interface alpha. I'm definitely liking the way it's coming along. Still hoping for those hotkeys, like you said. That would be good to have.
I'm surprised something like that wasn't added a while ago.
They did have them for a bit, but then they got pared down, and now they're completely gone again. So I don't know if they're coming back or what.
High keys are pretty useful when you have that much screen to traverse and so many other things you can be doing.
Yep.
Moving my mouse, I remember just, I never did really play with HD RuneScape because it was really inefficient in terms of mouse usage. So I always played in fixed window screen even before I quit, which was like 2 or 3 years after HD came out. Mm-hmm. Or no, I guess when did that come out? 2008? 2008.
Yep.
So yeah, I think it came out in China, so that was like 2 years.
They did find a way to make that relevant again, so that is good.
Yep, indeed.
All right, so next up, the Alchemist Amulet has returned. This thing was out last summer, wasn't it? Or was it sooner than that? Because I remember it, but it seems like last summer. Do you remember when it was?
I don't remember.
Okay. Anyways, you collect the 10 fragments once again, and then you make an amulet. If you use 1 to 9 fragments to create the amulet, it'll be cosmetic, but then 10, you get the special amulet with the functions thrown in. So first up, of course, the cosmetic item. Secondly, there's an amount of gold rewarded upon transforming it. It's now proportional to your total skill level, as well as the fragments used. So higher levels, the more gold you'll receive. And third, this amulet grants 15 high alchemy spells and 1 free teleport to the Grand Exchange every day. And then there's also a transmutation tablet that they brought in that can be used to convert 1 to 10 fragments. And then when you do that, the resulting gold will be doubled and up to a total of 5.4 million gold.
Ooh,
that's pretty nice when you think about it. 5.4 million gold, and you get 10 fragments, and I've already got like 6 in just 2 days. So, hoping I manage to get the rest of them tomorrow, that'd be pretty good, and the tablet. Because I just made some purchases this week that I'll talk about later that I could actually use the money to reimburse it for. So, definitely good to have this.
Does it take a whole long time to get those 10?
Well, I got 6 in 2 days, 3 spins a day.
Really? I just got 3.
Oh, through that thing. Right.
Yeah. So, not long. And if you throw in some of the daily challenges or whatever to get more spins, you'll definitely increase it that way. Or even maybe if you wanted to buy spins, you could do that as well. But I've not bought spins on the game yet, so haven't felt the need do that.
Can't complain either.
All right, so next up is a video we've been waiting for quite some time.
You were?
Yes. BTS video 53, Harvest Heaven.
I see featuring why.
Featuring the Farmed and Dangerous update. So this is for the farming update that's coming next week. Suffice to say, the seeds you get will be from high-level thieving, so that's always good. And also the Vine Sweeper minigame. That forgotten piece of content.
Vine Sweeper?
Yeah, Vine Sweeper.
Oh, that was like some farming one, right?
Yeah, the farming minigame that's the RuneScape version of Minesweeper.
Yeah, I maybe played that once or twice and then did not go back. You get like seeds and stuff. I don't particularly remember, but there's like rabbits maybe or moles or...
Yeah, you gotta avoid the rabbits because they'll eat your seeds if they find them before you do.
Maybe I didn't even play that. Yeah, I remember when it came out though. That was back when I still played.
Yeah, so definitely going to be interesting to see if people flock to that update because, you know, I don't remember last time I've even done Vine Sweeper and I'm a farming person. So maybe they could have thrown something in for Vine Sweeper as well to update the mechanics of that because, you know, Vine Sweeper and first person really kind of takes a great amount of time when you're not viewing it from the top-down grid like typical Vine Sweeper. So... Also, in the behind-the-scenes video, they highlighted that four of these will be produce seeds, and they'll grow in the allotments, so those will be things that'll affect your herblore and summoning. One crop in the video looked actually like Snape grass, so your own Snape grass in the allotments. I can say we've been wanting that for a long time, right? Also... There's going to be four for skill boosts, so I think that one's the Venus flytrap that they give. And then there's also one for growing the God Grapes, which will be used to enhance the God Brew Potions. So, you know, we already got the God Wines, or Ceridomen and Zamorak Wine, so that's going to be coming out with this as well. And it'll enhance the brews, the God Brews, to make them super potions. And there's one seed they did not mention in the behind the scenes. So I'm wondering what that one's going to be. Definitely very interested to see what's coming with this. And I don't know if people have such an appreciation for a mystery seed like I do. But, you know, these farming updates that come along really don't appear that often. So I feel like I got to take everything I can from this farming update.
Okay. You are the green thumb.
Farming updates can't be argued with when they come out. I mean,
yeah,
you make so many chances.
Especially high level farming updates. So, definitely been waiting a while for this one and very, very, very eager for next week. So, that's good. And also, behind the scenes bonus video for RuneScape 3 this week is the RS3 audio video, highlighting some of the changes they're doing for audio in RS3, particularly relating to the way they serve audio, in that audio is served now through a dedicated audio server, and you're getting full CD quality audio given to you.
Huh, not bad.
So have a watch through that to gain more insight on how that works. All right, that's it for RS updates. Shall we move on to the questions right now?
Okay, that's it, eh?
Yep. We got an audio question this week from Marumska. I will play that right now.
Hello, Sneaky Shane, Tipu Tricky, and Paul. How you doing? Moronska here. This week I'd like to ask, what is the big difference between your accents? I mean in Canadian and American. I know there are regional differences, same as down here, but what really makes them apart? I can only tell subtle differences anyway. Also, will you be watching the Eurovision Song Contest as it's on as it will be on the weekend? My favorite artist, Alexander Rybak, with his song, Suomi. Suomi. Something in your heart and your lakes, your forest used to be. Anyway, I'll talk to you next time. Thanks for all the shows. Romska out.
Right.
Yeah. So accents. Paul, do you hear any kind of Canadian accent in me?
Yes.
I don't know if I'd call it Canadian, but I hear an accent that's not my own. You're not difficult to understand in the slightest. Neither of you are, so that's a plus. For the New Englander accent, specifically for Vermont, we don't really say T's all too often. So Vermont is Vermont. Swanton, which is a couple towns north of me, is Swanton. St. Albans, which is very close to me, is St. Albans, if you want to do it right. Milton is Milton, etc., etc. You get the point. But
in other words, enunciate.
Yeah, we don't enunciate so great. down south, in terms of Alabama, Florida, probably, they're very laid back in their talking, so they have the southern drawl. In the Midwest, I believe it was scientifically proven some way or another through various, probably, I don't know, get some people to talk and say certain things and then play back. In any case, it's very neutral in terms of the United States. I don't know how people talk out in Wyoming.
I believe Wyoming was supposed to be like the most non-accented state in the country.
I'm thinking of Washington.
Actually, it's the entire West. I got actually a map here. This was on Dig a couple of weeks back of all of the American English dialects. So mine is specifically called Canada, which it covers most of Canada, except for French-speaking Canada and
yeah,
the
they
Atlantic
have some,
provinces.
You know when you're talking to a French-Canadian.
Yeah.
You just know, especially when you're here. I mean, they come down all the time for various reasons.
Yeah,
mostly
yeah.
Not a problem
like,
with that.
You want a French-Canadian accent, just listen to Jean Chrétien. Former prime minister and whatnot.
But, oh, just pretend you're a giant douchebag. That's not a great accent, but there you go.
Yeah. So they group the West like
I don't
Washington,
know
Oregon,
people,
Oregon.
I don't know anyone who's
California.
California is it's got to be its own, especially the
it's
coast.
It's not, according to this map.
Gee, thanks, Paul.
Thank you. Yeah, but you don't sound like you're from California. You grew up around enough people that didn't sound like they were from California that you don't sound like you're a quote-unquote California girl.
I'm not a girl.
Well, that's a good thing that you don't sound
I
like
I have
you
a
too.
Different Oregon.
I'm aware of this. Well, I assume I'm aware of this. I don't actually know, but yeah, that's the presumption. But when I think of California, I don't really think of a specific accent unless I'm thinking of like a really, yeah, douchey girl. Like, just
that's New Jersey.
That's a different douchey girl. Also, yeah, Jersey, New York, they both have their own separate accents.
Yeah,
Maine
that's listed
has
here.
Their own separate accent. Maine,
you're the North.
Yeah, but Maine has its own, and I can't do a good mimic of Maine.
Yeah, isn't your friend from there?
No, he's from... Well, he grew up in Massachusetts. He doesn't sound like he's from Massachusetts, other than the fact that he drives like he's from Massachusetts. But even he grew up near Boston, he doesn't sound like he's from Boston. Boston has its own unique accent. New York City has various accents. Maine has their own... I'm trying to think... There's some commercial that's around here that they talk about some wood stove and this guy has the stereotypical Maine accent and I can't mimic it because I just don't hear it very often, so I can't really say what it's supposed to sound like, but I'll try to see if I can find the commercial.
And then
as you get in
North.
The Midwest, there's not a whole lot. There's some stuff, like I'm from Ohio and a lot of my grandparents and my great grandparents, they would say, like, when they go out to wash a car, they go wash it. Warsh.
Wash.
And W is W. There's a couple other things that they would say, but I've never heard. And then just like Midwest, there's also the pop versus soda. Midwest is very pop. Once you get like halfway through New York, it changes from soda to pop. And then
it's
apparently
pop here.
It's soda. It's not pop.
Soda.
Yeah, we can have a discussion, but you're wrong. Then somewhere that's called Soda Pop, and then the only time I've heard it called Sodi Pop was on King of the Hill, but apparently that's like in Montana or something like that. Sodi Pop. Never heard that one before.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of variances in accents as you go around the United States. A lot of it, especially
hey everybody, this
the largest
is this is After the Fact, the Laxer Live After Show. My name is Dan Laxer, and you know what I did on the weekend? Here, can you zoom in on this?
Mm-hmm.
See the Band-Aid? I got my swine flu vaccination. I got the swine flu shot. The whole family did it. All four of us went together to the Cavendish Mall, and I'm convinced that these...
This is apparently a Montreal accent.
That is?
Yes. Let's try a different one. 404 file not too bad. Yeah, this is a good website. It's got like sound samples on it and everything. Let's see. So, no. Yes, New England, right? Vermont. Here we are, Vermont. Vermont. All right. Here we go.
Hello, my name is Bill. I was born here in Vermont. Born in Stowe, right upstairs my grandmother's room. My grandmother was an attending physician, and it didn't take too long. I guess everything worked out all right, because here I am.
Does that sound familiar, Paul?
Sounds fairly Vermont-esque, given that he wasn't saying tease, and he also said he was from near Stowe, which I know that's one of the main places you go if you're going to go to ski.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Also, if you have money and you want to go ski, that's where you go. If you don't have money, then you might not want to go snow too much. But they also, right down there is right next to the Ben & Jerry's plant. So, the original Ben & Jerry's plant. So, if you want to head down there, good old Ben & Jerry's. Hook you up. They have free tours, and you get ice cream at the end.
And so, as I remember, if depending on where you go, if you're a postal worker, they actually, in headquarters, actually give you free ice cream. Almost of the main distributors. Mm-hmm. My aunt, who was a postal worker way back when, she always, every Friday, she would stop by at the Ben & Jerry's to get free ice cream, because they were just like, you want to come in? Okay.
Yeah, I know anyone who works there gets some number of pints per week for free. And a lot of them just say, you know, I can't even eat this much ice cream. So they sell it to local stores. And they usually sell a pint for about $5. So usually decent markup, or usually decent profit for the people who sell
it.
They
got it for free.
They got it for free. So, I mean, it's just an extra bonus, basically.
Yeah, extra $20 a week. That ain't bad.
I wouldn't complain with an extra $20 a week. That's,
I was a housekeeper over there to Mr. Jerry's. Just that big house now where he come from. P.D. Carkins is next to it. I was a housekeeper over there where there was four men. And they were all...
Tennessee?
No, that's Newfoundland.
Okay.
Do you want to hear Tennessee?
Like... I hear that every day with Reed.
That's Trailer Park Boys. That's who I think of when I'm
hearing Howdy to Grandpa and Strang and Junior there.
Oh,
that's
boy.
Tennessee.
All right, let's move on to the second question before we kill time.
All right, so any of you guys watching this Eurovision thing?
No.
Nope. Yeah, I'm sorry. Neither am I.
Too busy.
Sorry about that, Barabska. Wish we could be more help with that one, but we don't watch that. And I'm thinking that must be some sort of Australian thing or European thing by the name, because I've never seen or heard of anything like that on the TV or the news around here. So, sorry about that. All right. Next question. Paul, you can read this one from Flamin' Stew.
Alrighty. Hey ho, sorry, didn't know if it was above. Hey ho, so I recently got my first 99 this week after playing the game for about 7 years, which is fire making. I was wondering what should be my next stop. I kind of thought it was, or kind of thought of either 99 thieving or a combat skill, but since I'm only level 170. Oh, I already got a quest cape, so that's out of the question. Question. Haha! Also, last question, what was your first ever 99 and the first ever quest you done? Thanks for answering my questions. Flame and Stew. I'm not used to the new leveling system, so I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah, 170 ain't bad. It's pretty high up.
What's the max?
Considering the highest is 200.
So, yeah, that's pretty good. So he's probably close to a couple 99s in terms of combat?
No.
Nah, I feel like in his 80s or something like that.
Yeah, somewhere.
I'm thinking of 80 average. What should you do, Shane? Maybe you should get 99. Maybe you should go for 99 farming with the new update.
Do something that you like. Whatever you like doing. You can do farming, but I mean that's a better long haul type skill. Unless you really just want to sit down, spend a bunch of money, and then get it. It's a great skill just to do in the background while you do anything else. It'll get you a nice profit too if you do it right. But I mean,
yeah, that's.
I was not as much as you used to, but still. 8 or something. Yeah, but I mean, I would get everything I got from Slayer and plant it in terms of herbs, and then, I mean, I got herbs, and I got a crap ton of levels, but, I don't know. But if you ever go for a 99, you generally just sit down and do it. Same thing, I mean, if you did fire making, you know, if you go for a 99, you sit there and you do it, because there's no way in hell you're going to get 99 fire making as your first 99 if you're just doing stuff in RuneScape. So unless you want to grind, I'd stick to something that you enjoy doing, which you may end up grinding anyway. But my first ever 99 was cooking, and I think I made money off of that too.
Same here. But cooking was my first 99. I was going for 99 fishing that summer, and cooking was just cooking and fishing goes hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Monkfish were released within. I think it was within 2 weeks in that summer. Started getting those until 99 fishing and cooking. And then I sold all my sharks and monkfish and bought myself a mess set.
Can I have it?
No. That's not complete anymore. I sold the green all one. Right. I sold the green one years ago.
Ah, too bad. I would definitely agree with what was said already in that you need to make sure you like what you're doing, because I've made this mistake with two skills already, magic and attack. I got 99 just for the hell of getting a 99, and that wasn't nearly as great as the other 99s that I actually wanted to get, like farming, agility, and woodcutting as examples. So keep that in mind when you get 99, something that you really want to do. But in regards to a suggestion, I have to say farming, because that is what's still my favorite skill in the game. And as these guys said, it's very simple to do. So that is one option. Another thing, since you already got 99 fire making, that you might consider, if you're looking for something maybe a little bit more laid back, fire making and wood cutting really go hand in hand. I like the idea that they're related to each other. So if you got one, you might as well get another and complete that area of RuneScape, if you know what I mean. So I'd say farming or woodcutting.
Well, then for woodcutting, though, you're just going to be selling the wood. And then,
not
I mean,
necessarily
I guess
anymore with Ivy. Were you around when Ivy came
out?
Oh,
yeah, you're right, yeah. Well, if you do it that way, but there is a song. I mean, if you do, you know, traditional woodcutting, you could either do fletching after that, which gets boring quick, and then try to make a profit. I don't know if it's still profitable at all. You can usually sell them half-done bows or something, but but I mean, if you can chain stuff together, yeah. If you can get the raw materials through one skill to get another skill higher in any way, it's generally a good thing to do. That way, you don't have to spend any extra money, and you can generally sell something at the end that you put time into, which will often get you money. So, I mean, if you just sold the raw wood, it might not get you as much as making the bows and then high alking or selling them on the Grand Exchange or whatever. So.
All right.
Sometimes that works out.
For me, the only one I really wanted to get was after my other two was crafting. So I was like, yeah, like I told you, Shane, that time, I was like, I'm going to go for 99 crafting because I really wanted to get it. Not that many people had it at the time on the forum. And it was just me. And it was a way for me to make some money.
Yes, and you made money along the way.
And I still make money off of it. Yay!
All right. So, first 99, we know Paul's was cooking. Yours was, did you say cooking as well?
He already said cooking, but was yours, okay. Mr. Shane.
Farming, of course.
That was your first one?
Yes, farming was my first 99.
I was there. It's on YouTube. I didn't record cooking, though. I recorded a lot of the other ones. Like my Slayer, I don't know if I recorded Attack or anything either. I might have. Attack was fun, though.
You'd have so much fun if you could come back and redo your Slayer at this point with the stage in the game.
I would not, but...
Yeah, you would. Based on the way the combat system is, you would.
That's all right. I don't have that kind of attention span or that many videos to watch. Which generally is how you do it. I watch so much South Park while doing RuneScape, just so you know.
When is the new season coming out?
October, I want to say.
Man.
Yeah.
All right, what was the first quest that we ever did? Mine was...
Jeff's assistant, cooking's assistant.
Yeah, probably.
That was like the first one everyone did.
It was either...
I don't know why I did Ernest the Chicken's first.
The chicken?
What was that?
Yeah, Ernest the Chicken.
What's wrong with the chicken?
What'd you have to do
Ernest
for that?
The Chicken. Veronica is very worried. Her fiancé went into a big, spooky manor house to ask for direction.
Oh, yeah.
And an hour later, he's still not out yet. That's where he becomes the chicken.
Oh, that definitely wasn't my first one, but...
Yeah, that was back in
the day. I don't know. It was one of those...
Was either sheep shearing or the cooking assistant?
It was probably cook's assistant, but... Even then, it doesn't seem quite right. It seems like it would have been something else, but really, it's been so long, I have no idea.
The reward for Ernest the Chicken is 4 quest points, 3,000 coins, 10 eggs, 300 feathers, access to the Killerwatt plane, members only, and of course the 2 squeal spins.
That was not your first one.
Yes, that was my first quest, Ernest the Chicken. Granted, it didn't have all those rewards, but...
You weren't able to get to that Killerwatt's plane was added a long time.
That's optional. That was added way later.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was added Slayer. I mean, that's... Isn't that, secondary? Like, don't you have to do a different quest first?
Yeah, that unlocks now when you do so Ernest the Chicken.
There?
Okay. It's an unlock.
And you have to wear
rubber
boots.
I think
boots.
I might have did Ernest the Chicken in RS Classic.
It wasn't out in RS Classic.
Saying. Oh. What's the... Yeah, sheep shear might have been the first one.
Oh, yeah, that one's still fun. You can still go there and share the sheep, even if you've already shared them before for the quest.
You always do
that. Yeah, well, it grows back.
Everyone always... Back then, making yarn was a nice little way to make money.
Hell, anything was a good way to make money. I mean, you could collect chicken feathers and make money. That was great.
You still can now with those.
Is it still worth anything? I mean...
Decent amount.
Well, they removed sheep shear from the game.
Really? Why?
Yeah, they've been on a run lately over the past year and a half or so of cleaning up the early game in an effort to make the storylines more concise and focus around the signature heroes instead. So that they've
What's
kept
signature
them around.
Heroes?
Well, they're signature heroes, you know, like Ariane.
No,
what was that? There are some new NPCs that were introduced within the past year that you kind
of... So then it's not like... So they're basically removing old stuff to accommodate the new stuff.
Yeah, but they still do the same storyline.
Just leave the old shit in there for people who want to do it. I mean, that's like...
They removed Romeo and Juliet.
Hey, you can...
How can you remove that quest? That might have been my first one.
That was definitely not my first one. But you can...
That was early on.
You can go back to 07 and do those quests.
Oh dear.
Okay. not going to pay extra money to do the quest. I mean, they're not even great quests, but why remove them? It seems kind of stupid. I mean, they don't
Here's a quest
add anything,
they've removed.
But they don't subtract anything either.
Prince Ali Rescue, there. Romeo and Juliet, Sheep Shearer, Unstable Foundations, Witch's Potion, Doric's Quest, and Rune Mysteries has been reworked, as well as Demon Slayer.
Mm. Oh, yeah, Demon Slayer. I used to hate walking past that stupid thing.
Why? Too wizards? Scary?
No, because they always used to attack when I was a noob. All the little dark mages or whatever that were around it, they'd run out.
I actually got attacked by the highwayman between Port Sarum and Trainer, and I was telling him, please stop killing me. I don't have much. Then he's, and they're like, oh, hey, I'm actually winning. And they're like, oh, he's running. Oh, I'm going to kill you now. Whack. Ooh, I got a cape. Yeah, the guy was there probably laughing his butt off, going like, oh, he's talking to a computer generated thing. I don't know. I don't know what that goes on. It's another person. Until he started running away, and I went, whack.
This is like a rundown of the early days of RuneScape. I'll chime in with my early storyline. I didn't have the magic level when I was doing, I think, Plague City, so I had to walk all the way between Ardoyan and Varrock with those vials, because you couldn't, like, you could put them in the bank or whatnot and then teleport, but I didn't have the magic level. So I had to walk back and forth like 3 times for that one quest.
Jeez.
So we walked through the gate of Falador and go to Varrock?
Yeah, that's right. Under the mountain, but over the mountain the first time because I had to do that quest. So,
Wait, Wolf Jeez. The mountain that's next to Catherine.
White Wolf Mountain.
Yeah.
That's what I said. Okay.
Oh, I thought you said what mountain. No. Yeah, man. You had it right.
All right. Thank you, Stu, for that question. I hope to hear more from you in the coming weeks. This last one is from Parnassius. Hey, guys. Quick question for you. How do you feel about Jagex nerfing the power of Drygor weapons and the players responsible for the dumping them on the GE for a ridiculously low price? They're still the best weapons in the game, even if they aren't quite as powerful as they first were. I picked up a mace main hand for $65 million and an offhand for $22 million. I see the prices are slowly recovering. I can kill automatons before they do the ground strike, and they still power through the QBD, even though my combat stats are all at level 92. Also, what are your thoughts on Jagex making your combat levels mean more? My personal opinion is that a player with 99 should have a lot more killing ability than someone on my level of 92. I'm happy Jagex are fixing this. Thanks for the great podcast each week. Happy gaming from Pern. All right, so the Drygor weapons were nerfed and dumped on the exchange. You know, I have to say, rightly so. Yeah.
So why were they nerfed? Or why were they so awesome that they had to be nerfed?
Well, you know, they're end game.
They were the most powerful weapon in the game.
Yeah.
So they had the highest bonuses, or
yeah, the highest accuracy and damage bonus. So, apparently they felt they were too much, so they brought them down. And, you know, I can understand why people are upset about that, because the Kalphite King, where they came from, came out last year. So, I mean, that's quite a long time to wait for a nerf. So,
way too long to get a nerf. I mean, the friggin' Abyssal Whip was nerfed like 4 or 5 times in the first couple weeks.
Oh, you remember when it first came out, it did something.
Oh,
with,
what it, special that held it people was. In place.
It, yeah, held people in place. It was basically a snare or something. That wasn't bind. It was like the next one up. And then they started lowering it, and it would like low. It would either steal special attack or steal their run or something. It was really awesome. And then it started to get lousy. And I think they did improve it at one point, but it was passed when I quit.
Yeah. So this is back in the era of special attacks. But yeah, this is far too long for this
special
to happen.
Special attacks anymore?
No, they're gone.
Why? Freaking Jagex, removing all the good
you
stuff.
You have abilities now. They're better.
Well, who gives a crap? I want my special attacks.
They're better.
I'm going to stab you in the face 4 times with the DDS.
You mean DDP++?
Oh, you mean newfangled stuff. I know that's what it was called even when I quit, but DDS.
All right. But
had the better stuff.
You know, I think this is just the natural course of the market. People dump them on the exchange. People will buy them up, and then they'll reach their new price eventually. And you know, it's unfortunate
what are the
price
of them right now, anyway.
Yeah, they're still stupidly expensive.
Trigor 80, Trigor Longsword 80, Mill Mace 70, Rapier 72, Longsword 55, Offhand Mace 25, Offhand Rapier 39.
It's not that much
and
for
any Chitin scraps. Chitin scraps are 86 each.
Yeah.
And
you know, like I said, there's no problem with this. The only problem is that the Grand Exchange doesn't update quick enough to effectively capture what's happening. I mean, the Grand Exchange can only go down, I think, by 5% per day, which is still controlled, which is not good. But, you know, if Jagex wants to nerf it, that's what happens with it. But still, like you said, they're very powerful weapons, and who's going to complain? Like, or rather, who should be complaining about this? Like, compare
the
Drygor and Chaotic Rapiers. The Chaotic Rapier is next best from Dungeoneering. 980 damage and 1924 accuracy, whereas Drygor is 1102 damage and 2458 accuracy.
Does it degrade at all either? Which is
yes.
Yes, it does. Oh. But you can use tokens and cash to repair it.
Do you have to use both, or can you just use one or the other? Or...
You can use combination.
It's almost always a combination. Either you pay all in gold or you use a combo, but if you use, we can use more tokens and the cost to repair it dramatically decrease.
And same thing goes for the Chitin scraps for the Drygor stuff. You need to use those to repair these.
It's like Balrog's armor.
Yeah. But, you know, it'd be nice to see some level 90 ranged and mage stuff eventually. But yeah.
Okay.
Perfectly fine for Jaggers to do that. And with regards to combat levels, blocking certain things, not blocking things, doing better as you get higher up, definitely. I fully agree with that. Because like you said, somebody at 92, you have to literally double your XP from going 92 to 99.
So, yeah.
So one would hope that going from 92 to 99 will double your effectiveness or at least close. And
yeah,
I think
say...
we can all agree before this EOC update came out, combat at higher levels, I'd say anything past 90 came down to just a dice roll,
pure luck.
Practically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not that way anymore?
Well, no. They're definitely making your levels have more effect, and the last change to this was actually last week. So it's very good.
Interesting.
Same things with potions, too. So you can use a potion, and it boosts you up to 120. You will get that much of a boost as well when you use that weapon after that. Mm-hmm. So, wholeheartedly agree with this, and this is one of the reasons I'm very, very happy with the Evolution of Combat update so far.
Okay, moving on to the next question, Shane. You take it.
There is no more questions.
Okay, good.
Don't say that. We like questions. They're the most favorite part of the show. So much so that we're going to say that anybody who wants to send in an audio question, you can do so by emailing them to questions@rsbnb.com. Just attach the file and we'll get to it. Or you can phone them into the Google Voice number, which is 571-572-2632.
And once someone here is going to win a prize at the end of the show.
Okay, so we look forward to hearing your questions. And remember, if those methods don't work for you, you can find the forum topic weekly, where you can fill out just a generic reply to the post, and we'll put your question in that way. All right. So tech news.
What are you doing?
currently?
Yeah, I was gonna say, are you like sitting next to a bonfire or something?
It sounds like you're playing with the paper clipper or something.
No, I'm loading a magazine.
Sounds like playing with a binder, opening and closing, opening and closing, opening and closing.
Nope, just loading the mag.
Are you gonna shoot it?
Tonight? Or in general?
Yeah.
Not tonight, too late.
Okay. So, this Windows Blue update.
Yes.
Windows Blue will be free for users of Windows 8. So, if you get a computer with Windows 8 on it, you'll get Windows Blue for free. Which is a good thing. And in a way, it's an admission by Microsoft that Windows 8 was not properly done the first time around. And we're at the same level of development. This is the same thing that happened back when OS X was first released in the year 2000. So,
did 10.1 come for free?
Yeah, 10.1 was free. So this is the same thing that's happening here. And you know what? I guess Microsoft has to do what they feel they need to do to recover that part of the market sector.
Yeah, they made a lot of bold choices in terms of UI, but like I said, it's not terrible, but there's things that were done that didn't need to be done, or things that were removed that didn't need to be removed, especially for legacy purposes. The whole start menu thing, I mean, they're not start menu so much as completely changing it from the old interface that they've had since Windows 95 to the fact that you have to keep everything, or the Metro style stuff where you have to have everything full screen. That change, I don't know, it's not really meant for a desktop or a laptop. It's meant for a touch screen.
It's not a change we can believe in.
Well, it's a change that's not necessary, especially not for a platform that, for the most part, is not of the new design. It's the most people that are running Windows 8 are not running it on Windows 8 specific hardware. They're running it on something that was made for Windows 7 or below. Not that hampers the capability. I mean, I think Windows 8 either has the same or about the same specs as Windows 7 in terms of requirements. So you don't need a whole lot to run it. I'm comfortably running it on 7-year-old laptops without any issues. There's no need for some of the things that they did. Some of the optimizations are very nice and most people probably won't notice them, but, especially once you throw a solid state drive in the machine, it's really hard to argue with the fact that Windows 8 is definitely faster than Windows 7 for startup, et cetera,
stuff like that.
It's just nice.
It's like a whole peer pressure kind of thing. The people drink the Kool-Aid, the negative Kool-Aid, and they get these couple of negative reviews out there that they might stumble upon. Or they talk to one of their friends who is their IT person or a technology person in their life, and they hear bad stuff about Windows 8 from them. And that effectively skews their opinion, so much so that when they watch Windows 8, I mean, when they use Windows 8, they'll have that opinion with them, and it will negatively affect their Windows 8 experience. So, I mean, in a way, Microsoft should have been more proactive in this. I mean, I didn't see Windows 8 ads on TV that weren't for these tablets. And there they go. There they are, reinforcing that same stereotype right there. Windows 8's for tablets only. So,
yeah. Or at least they emphasize the touch features, which they emphasize it to the point where that's what they believe the future is going to hold.
Yep.
But it's, if you want to do serious work,
it's
you're
minor
not doing it on a touch
on
device.
Desktop.
It's not really something that you're going to use full time. Whenever I get my next laptop, I'm not even prioritizing touch because I don't want to reach up to the screen to touch it to do something. I want to do everything from the keyboard and the mouse. And there's things that would kind of be nice, like for images, it's great for zooming in and just swiping back and forth. But then again, I have to start cleaning my screen and it's annoying. I don't want to do that.
And make sure you didn't
unless I like
matte greasy food before you did it.
Yeah, plus I like matte screens. I really don't like glossy screens, so I'd have to get a glossy screen if I was doing swiping, and you wouldn't want to use a matte screen for
and
that.
See, this is where Apple has it right. Touch is not a primary thing in the computers they do. The touch you get on the Mac.
They have a clear separation between desktop and mobile. Other than the fact that they
got
that,
the magic trackpads and the magic mouse. And that's good enough.
That launcher thing.
Launchpad.
Launchpad. That's not necessary.
It's useful if you use touch. And I do. I use the trackpad on the laptop and the desktop, and I use Launchpad daily, more so than I use the dock.
Yeah,
so
but just,
it is a touch-based thing.
Not Windows key. Command key space.
That's
type something in. Yep.
Yeah, that still works.
I use that on when I'm in Mac. I use Windows search when I'm in Windows, and I use some random search when I'm in a Linux distribution. I mean, that's the way to launch stuff. Or you just pin it to your, you either have it on your desktop or you have it on your start bar. Or
yes.
Dock or whatever. Yes. I mean, seriously, if you're getting that much stuff that you can't find it on a regular, I mean, there's very few things that I run on a regular basis that I don't already have pinned to my taskbar.
Yep. Yeah.
It's just,
so, there we go.
The people that have
and
those complaints are either they don't use it for a long enough time to realize they don't actually need to do it the way that they've been doing it forever. You don't need to go to your desktop to click on an icon. You don't need to go to the start menu to find Word. Put it on your freaking desktop or pin it to your taskbar. It's not a complicated thing, and that's where you're going to see it when you're running it anyway.
I put that on my one of the shortcuts on my start menu, so I see most of my most recent ones always up there.
Yep.
Yeah, there you go. Anyways, Windows Blue, look out for this holiday season, apparently.
Indeed. And then I know at least with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Farley from Windows Weekly, at least that's where I've heard it, they were both saying that Windows Blue, before it was declared free, should be free due to the fact that having a segmentation that's already Windows 8 is not taking off to the point where it's I think it has passed Vista. It's like at 12% market share or something like that now, whereas Vista is down to 8. But it needs to if you had a pay for 8.1, then it would segment
people
the Windows 8 market more. Yeah, people wouldn't buy it.
Yeah.
The fact that it's through Windows Store is also kind of interesting. The way it's going to get rolled out.
Yes.
I'm half interested if it's going to be through the Windows Store or go somewhere else if you're an IT pro and download something, which will propagate out to the other websites and you'll just be able to download it as a service pack. But we'll see.
Yep. All right. Moving on to some Google stuff. Google is always good. So Google has unified Gmail, Drive, and Picasa storage.
So you have 15 gigabytes shared between the three. And I believe for both Google Drive and Picasa, if you upload, or maybe Picasa is just...
Because I only have 10.1.
Yeah, it hasn't rolled out for me yet either. At least not the last time I checked. But let me check. Yeah, 10.1. I know for at least images, anything below 24 or anything 2048 by 2048 and below... will be not counted against your storage. Anything that's video that's 1080p and 15 minutes or less, I think it's 1080p, doesn't count against your storage. Anything
and this is
that's
for Google Drive?
Yeah. Anything that is created on Google Drive in terms of a document, PowerPoint, or a document or presentation, a worksheet, etc., that does not count against your storage space and other stuff. So basically, the more you're into the Google sphere, the more you can just keep your stuff up there and not have to pay anything versus not using it at all and just using it for dumb storage.
So if I use Google Drive, I get 15 gigs. So I can put videos up that are under 15 minutes in 1080p, and they won't count against my storage.
Correct. You could also just put them up on YouTube and have them private. as an example. But okay. I think for Drive, you at least leave them in the format you wanted. They also have something where I think you can upload raw images to Google Plus now, I want to say. Somewhere they said do raw or do something that were the original size. But I don't think that counts for Drive. There's some other unique things, but I don't know if the article mentioned it. I know that was talked about in the various other places. I know my dad, he's still on the old pricing plan for Gmail. So he gets the 25 gig per year for $5, I think, per year, instead of a monthly fee, which is...
Oh, okay.
So I don't know how this impacts him, but... Yeah, this one doesn't show...
You know, it's pretty nice that they're doing this because it makes sense with Google Drive needing, or rather not needing as an option for attachments in Gmail. Definitely makes sense to have that thing for small
pictures. Oh, no, sorry, it's not Picasso. It's just Google Plus. It's not Picasso at all.
Okay. Well, still, might as well use that.
Yeah.
I think Google Plus on its own is better than Flickr. For picture sharing.
Yeah, I don't see Flickr too much anymore. It seems like it works fine, but it's not... I don't know, I just don't see people... I don't know anyone who personally uses Flickr. I see people online use Flickr, but I don't know anyone personally who uses it. And they either use Facebook or they just link me to something on Imgur that they just uploaded for the hell of it.
Yep. All right, well, that's definitely good. So more reason to use Google Drive. Yay.
Indeed. Yeah, and the image editing thing that they have for Google Plus, it's rather interesting. I've tried out some of their auto editing or the magic fixes. They could take a picture that's kind of grainy or whatever with your cell phone in a low light situation. They'll try to fix it the best they can. They do a pretty good job. And they also say if you take... I think it was, I can't remember who, it was some Asian guy, no, it was Indian guy when it was on Google. I watched the full 3.5 hours of Google I.O., at least for the keynote, and they had 650 some odd pictures for his vacation. He uploaded them all to Google Plus, and Google Plus will use aesthetics, lighting, image blur, and a couple other things. They look at all that, and then it picks your like 10 or 15 best images. And the pictures that they picked were of his,
Wow
or why? Yeah, they pick the best pictures, and they're generally the ones that humans would pick. And they actually said they had a bunch of humans looking through photos to figure out which ones they would say are the best ones. And they algorithmically place this in there. So in any case, if you upload a buttload of pictures, it will pick the best ones for you. And you can go through to pick them yourself, but chances are this will take a lot of work out of it, and you can just show these pictures off. And there's another one that if you upload pictures that look fairly the same, but some people blinking or whatever, they'll include a quote unquote gift for you, which is like a GIF type thing of images. I haven't really experimented with that at all, but yeah.
Anyways, definitely seems like Google's the place to be. So, yes. This last piece of tech news.
Yep. So, apparently a very large percentage of United States teens are killed texting versus while they are drinking and driving. So it's more dangerous to text than drink and drive, which I believe Mythbusters also proved to be a...
More than 300,000 teens are injured and more than 3,000 die each year as a result of sending SMS messages while behind the wheel. By comparison, 282,000 are injured and 2,700 are killed as a result of drunk driving. You know, I wish they would have given exact numbers on the texting thing, because they say more than, but then they give exact numbers for the drinking and driving, which, you know, I am a skeptic when it comes to distracted driving laws. I don't think you should be able to be told what you can and can't do in your own car. I think you are the owner of it, and you are ultimately in charge of where it goes, how it goes, and how fast it goes. And if you don't have the appropriate judgment to do that, then, well, you should bear the consequences. Rather than
and what if it's someone else that ends up hurting you? Not you, it's yourself.
Well, then they get sent to jail for good amount of time.
Uh-huh, yeah, when you're dead, Shane. When you're dead.
All right. Although it is illegal to text and drive in the UK, it's still allowed in many states in the US. And once again, that's a good thing. So, Paul, tell us why you included this one.
Because many of our audience members are from the United States and are also in their teens. So just something to be aware of. If you're texting and driving, take a second thought about it. Maybe be a little safer. In terms of if you do it and it's illegal, you will most often do it, or if you know that you may get pulled over or it's generally frowned upon, you do it in your lap or something that's not viewed from the road. So that's why you're not paying attention. Whereas if it were legal or less frowned upon, you could do it above the steering wheel where you could actually see, at least have a better chance at seeing, rather than looking in your lap and smiling. You could look out towards the road and potentially have a better chance of, you know, but yeah.
And you know, it doesn't stop at this. It continues to everything else. So like, if it's going to just be on this, you might as well make it illegal to talk to the person next to you, be in deep conversation. Because I think it's also been proven that if you are in conversation with someone, even with a hands-free device, your attention drifts. So, hence why I feel that these laws are a waste of time. So, but in general, good food for thought. And thank you for bringing this to everyone's attention. Because you are right bang on the nose with the market share for this. Oop. Market share? What the heck am I talking about? No.
I don't know.
Listeners, we got number one market share.
We got all those 50,000 people who tune in each week to hear about the RuneScape news.
All right. So that's it for tech news. Thank you for curating those for us. Good job. Moving on to the skill of the month update. The Slayer skill of the month, Paul, that you're not competing in.
99, I'm good.
16 days in, Bletherskite has taken the lead. He currently has 4.4 million experience gained. Meanwhile, Zant is in second place with roughly 3 million XP. And third place is 1.8 million XP with Forged. I mean, Forged with 1.8 million XP. I'm sorry I swapped that around. I don't know why I did that. But nonetheless, very interesting results here this weekend. Rare to see a lead change in a skill like this, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyways, also of note, Minor Goo has not received any XP yet. So Minor Goo, if you're listening, go out, kill a crawling hand or something and get like 5 XP.
He's already got over 99, so I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's true.
One of four people who has over 99.
Yeah,
although
so...
Jam Andy 52 is going to hit 99, potentially, by the end of the month, if they keep
actually,
up a good rate.
Yeah, actually, take that back. You don't need to do any. You've already got 99. But you're all right. Minor Goo, Lepro, Poison Nova, Metal Maniac, and Bletherskite all started with over the 13 mil XP mark. So that's actually 5 people in this skill of the month who had 99. So very good to see the amount of effort going on here that is going on.
Indeed, indeed.
All right, time for the pick of the week. I wasn't intending on using this as a pick this week, but no, that is not the pick of the week. The pick of the week is, of course, the new Star Trek movie, because that did come out this week. So being what we like to focus on from time to time, I thought it would be a good idea to take this timely movie release and use it for pick of the week this week. I already saw the movie. It is, it's a good version. It seems to be following the same every other rule. Once again, I thought this one was immensely better than the first one. and fixed a bunch of the things that were wrong with the first one as well. So this one, I would have to say, has my complete seal of approval. So if you're looking for something to do, or you've wanted to get into Star Trek before, you definitely go have a look at this movie.
And how essential is it? How essential is it that someone knows some Star Trek background before they go and see this movie?
Should they at least
see that the first video or the first movie?
Nah.
It would be nice if you could, but it's not required. It's simple enough that you'll get enough out of it if you don't see the first one from 2009. But you know, it always adds more depth to it if you know what's going on pertaining to this. So, for example, I picked up quite a few things in there. If somebody who's just going in to watch it will just watch it as a modern kind of crime movie, I guess you could say, set in space. Whereas somebody who saw 2009 will have a better idea of what's going on. And then, of course, somebody who's seen everything will get a whole lot more from it as well. So definitely not required, but it would be nice to at the very least see 2009 first.
Righto.
And, you know, the unfortunate thing is that most of the places around here are fairly advanced. So the only ones that were really available were the 3D version. And I don't know. I just do not like 3D movies. It just doesn't add much to it for me. And it's just an annoyance to have to sit glasses on my head with the other glasses that I already wear.
Yes, as I said, that's why I don't like 3D TV. And I always said it was a gimmick. For us who wear glasses, it's really annoying to wear another pair of glasses. It's glasception.
Yes. There you go. But, yeah, so that's the pick of the week, Into Darkness. All right. So next up is the spring RSBNB update survey. So if you're a listener of this show and you want to have a bit of input in the way we're going and what we might be doing in the future, just click on this survey. It's short. 10 questions long. We don't ask for any personal information. The only personal information we ask for is optional, and at that it's very general, like when did you start playing RS, what's your combat level, and what's your overall level. So it's a very simple survey. Take it. Won't take you very long. It's only 10 questions, so we would very much appreciate it if you did do that.
Righto.
So what have we been doing? Paul, you want to go first?
Done another year of school. Should have about a year left. I got to start a summer class on Monday. It's online, so I'm not, you know, too worried. It's through the community college, so again, not too worried. Just kind of hanging out at home and doing random stuff around the house. Oh, played through BioShock Infinite and other stuff recently. Very fun games. Would encourage other people to do that. Also, Steam sales are coming up, so do that stuff. And for PC gaming next Monday, Tuesday, we've got Counter-Strike Go is on sale this weekend for $7.50 US, and it's also a free weekend to play, so if you want to check it out, you could do that and vote for CSGO as an example.
TF2 is winning. I just voted.
It always wins. Not always, but very frequently wins. Nearly every week, despite my best efforts to try to play something different. I like TF2, but everyone always votes for it. 3-4, Counter-Strike Go to Team Fortress 2, and I'm sure Shane was just telling Checky to vote for TF2, but
no.
We shall see.
No.
Okay.
He did that on his own.
Oh, sure he did. Vote.
All right, what have you been up to?
With me, I finally completely upgraded ports. And Uncle Dano finally surpassed me in skill total. Congrats to you, Mr. Dano. You actually had more free time than I did. No, I leveled up something. What the heck did I level up during? Oh, yeah, I leveled up Slayer earlier this week.
Good yeah, man. That was good man.
What'd you get?
93. I mean, yeah, 93. I want to try and get 90 agility just so I can get some of the shortcuts, and that's about it.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do.
I want to do construction, but I'm too lazy right now to go grab the hammers. Jeez. And shut up, Shane. I heard that. And you know, remember the old saying, Shane, weak eyes, good ears. Anyway, while we're at it, Shane.
That was a bit too long for that, but.
All right.
Go, Shane.
Anything
finished.
Else?
We'll say my last part for after you're done.
All right. What did I do this week? Back at the Barrows, not much really happening there. I pretty much given up on trying to get the RM's book and wand, so I broke down and I bought the, what's it called? Wand of Treachery? Does that sound right? From the Wilderness Warbands? I think it's Wand of Treachery. Bought that and a Mage's book, so I'm just going to use that instead because, you know, after my best That's effort awesome. Of Barrowsing, you know, over going quite often, I really didn't come out with much. Best I got this week with the Guthans chain skirt worth a grand total of 449,000 GP. So, yeah, that's why I'm back doing that. But in the meantime, what I'm going to be doing, I'm guessing, is I'm going to be finishing up my prayer, I think. So that's what's next for me.
Okay, so...
Also did some work on the interface... The interface alpha, which I have screenshots of that are in the show notes. Forgot to remind everyone of that. But yeah, spent some time on both the alpha and beta this week. All right.
Okay.
So what's this
man.
Other thing you wanted to bring up?
All right. So I just found this out about 2 days ago. Anyway, I ended up getting a coupon for 75% off Total War Shogun 2 off of Steam. And it's valid until May 23rd, which is next Thursday. Yes. So anyway, I made a little mini competition saying whoever posts a question, I do a random pick, and someone wins the coupon. So, Paul, why don't you roll the dice for us, see who wins.
We're
roll
doing
one six-sided dice.
Okay, then. We're going to roll the dice.
Yes, so anyway, just so you know, one and two will be Mormumska, three and four will be Flaming Stew, and five and six will be Parnassus.
Number four,
all right. Congratulations to you, Flaming Stew, for winning a 75% coupon off of Total War Shogun 2. Huzzah! Contact me over the PM on the forum, and I'll get you your coupon.
All right. Savvy. Congratulations.
Yes. It's a good Pretty game.
Good. Okay. Is that the one in Imperialistic Time Japan or something?
Feudal.
Both of them are.
Right.
Okay, like feudalistic Japan, that's right. That's what I meant.
Feudal was Shogun 1. Shogun 2 has a bit more of what they did with Shogun 2 was they kind of tried to introduce a little more of late Imperial Japan where they would start getting colonized, right? U.S. and everything else. Well, not colonized, more of open up trade by Admiral Perry. So there's actually some Western influence as well.
All right. That's very good. Sounds good. All right. With that being said, we'll see you guys next week for the farming update. Take care and you'll be next time.